Whenever you are convicted about the way you think, your behavior, your attitudes, your actions, that's not a natural conviction. That's a supernatural conviction that is happening in the same life of the person who just came out of a carnal state of mind. That's an interaction that is constantly going on. And Father is constantly trying to get you to think his thoughts while you're being bombarded with your thoughts and the fiery darts of the enemy. We are constantly in a battle for our mind and our thinking, and the enemy is trying to take your mind, trying to take your thoughts captive when you're supposed to take your thoughts captive.
Shalom, saints, and welcome to our verse-by-verse study of the Gospel according to John. I'm your host and teacher, Arthur Bailey. It is evident in Scripture that 5,000 men were fed, but there was also an unnumbered amount of women and children present for this miracle, as recorded by John. From the dialogue recorded between Yeshua and Andrew, we see that Yeshua knew he was about to perform a miracle amongst his disciples in the presence of the multitude. Matthew, Mark, and Luke record Yeshua looking to heaven and giving thanks to his Father and ours. The miraculous thing about miracles is that they are unexplainable. Of all the signs, wonders, and miracles that occurred in the Bible, in the Old and New Testament, not one is explained as to how it happened. Yeshua is teaching his disciples and us a lesson. Look to Father for our provisions, not our limited resources. The message title in this podcast is Yeshua Feeds the Multitude. So, let's study.
In most of your Bibles, you'll probably see, if you have a Bible that has headings, that Yeshua or Jesus or whatever name is in your Bible, feed the 5,000. And I purposely named this teaching, Yeshua Feeds the Multitude, because as we go through it, it becomes evident that there were 5,000 men, but 5,000 of the men who were present was in the midst of a unnumbered amount of women and children. And so although there were 5,000 men, 5,000 was not the total number, which takes this miracle that is done here to a whole nother dimension. And I say it's a miracle because in the latter part of this passage, John records the feeding as a miracle. And it's important to us because when it comes down to miracles, I've had to identify in my own personal life those things that have hindered me from walking in the ability, the mindset that I can actually work miracles. Now, when you think about it, because I'm going to tell you, it takes some intense searching within ourselves to conclude that you can actually work a miracle. Some of you may not see yourself as one who can. And I want to point out to you today, too, how our religious journey. Now, I really need y'all to kind of stay tuned because I'm going to tell you the enemy is going to do a lot to try to distract. I've been in prayer this morning. Those of you joining us online, I'm saying to you, you want to focus today because ask yourself this. Have you looked at yourself, identified yourself, come into agreement with the fact that you have been called to work miracles? Can you say within yourself, I am a worker of miracles? When you think about those words, check out the challenge you have in actually letting those words come out of your mouth. Now, yeah, in your mind, you could probably acquiesce to it. But in the reality, do you go through the day? When is the last time you thought about yourself as a worker of miracles? Now, that's the reality. You can say, yes, I am a miracle worker, because you know that's what the scriptures say about you. But when is the last time you thought of yourself as one who could work miracles? Have you thought about this recently? Have you thought about it in the last week, in the last month, in the last year? Or do you think about it when I bring it to your attention in these teachings? We have no problem agreeing with the Bible as it is written. The problem is not agreeing with what is written. It is doing what is written. That's where the disconnect comes in. We don't have a problem believing it. The issue comes with doing it. And by believing, we put ourselves in the category of a hearer. When we read it, when we hear it, we believe it. But the Bible instructs us to be a doer. And if we are simply a believer and not a doer, there's a possibility we may have some deception going on within us. It's not to make excuses, brothers and sisters. It's to confront the deception that is operational so we can move the deception out of the way and become doers of the things we say we believe. That's where, as they say, the rubber meets the road. John records this as a miracle. The word miracle is defined as a sign. Now, remember, Yeshua said, and some want to jump and harp on the fact that Mark 16, the latter part of Mark 16, was not in early manuscripts, but Yeshua said, these signs shall follow them that believe. One of the words for miracles is sign, mark, token. These are all words that is associated with miracles. And then Strong's goes further and say that by which a person or a thing is distinguished from others and is known. Of miracles and wonders by which Elohim authenticates the men sent by him, or by which men prove that the cause they are pleading is of Elohim. See, when you operate in the authority and power that is given to you, to find yourself in times and places looking to work a miracle. You will pray. And I know what it means to pray for the sake of praying, but to pray believing that what you pray is going to happen. To pray believing that what you pray for at that moment is going to happen at that moment. To lay hands on somebody who is sick with the expectation that they are going to be healed at that moment, not get well later. Having the faith that when you step out in faith, the expectation that you're going to see the manifestation of the thing that you stepped out in faith for in the first place. This goes beyond believing. We don't want to be unbelieving believers. We want to be believing believers. Believing believers do what they say they believe. Unbelieving believers believe they can do it, but don't do it. We don't want to be that. We want to be what the scriptures say about us. I believe that's what you want, if I'm not mistaken. If that's what you want, at least, you know, throw me a finger. That didn't sound right, did it? Don't throw me no, you know, unless it's an index. Whew, see, that's that renewing of the mind. See, to the pure, all things are pure. So I got some stuff going on still up there. You see, anyway, moving right along. John chapter 6 opens with the phrase, after these things. After these things, Yeshua went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. Those of you who were with us last week, you know that we were dealing with the topic, Search the Scriptures. And in this particular topic, Yeshua is dealing with the religious leaders who are confronting him because of a miracle that he had done earlier. And he told them that he was who he said that was, according to the prophets that had written about them, that John's testimony was a powerful testimony, but there's a testimony greater than John, and that was the works that he was doing. And so John here, and speaking of John the Baptist, John, the writer here, says, after these things. Again, at first glance, it would appear that John is speaking of after the closing of chapter 5, where Yeshua is speaking to the religious leaders about search the scriptures. But the backdrop of this phrase, after these things, comes after Yeshua heard that John had been murdered by Herod the Tetrarch, and John's disciples had come and told Yeshua about John's beheading. Now, the thing about this is that you don't find this in John. Again, this is one of those miracles that is, well, some would say, I haven't searched all the miracles in the Bible, but I know based on the scholars and the commentaries and the commentators, they say that this is the only miracle that is recorded in all four Gospels. So we know, based on what Matthew, Mark, and Luke wrote concerning this same situation, because they record the events leading up to this moment, to this event. In Matthew chapter 14, it says, verse 10, and he sent and beheaded John, this is Herod, in the prison. Now remember, Herod the Tetrarch was the king of Israel. And what we see is a perverted king. One, John has confronted this fella that he had married his brother's wife. Now, if his brother was dead, it wouldn't have been a problem for him to be married to his brother's wife. The fact that John is confronting him about being married to his brother's wife is because his brother's still alive. And so John now marries his brother's wife, and some say that he did some things that were not right, or that he actually even had his brother murdered. Nevertheless, John tells him what he has done is not right. Now, the wife of Herod has a daughter. And this daughter obviously is of age, and she does dancing. And so Herod, this king of Israel, which was not from the line of Judah, by the way, was not even an Israelite of any tribe, by the way, was from the Edomians, which traces their lineage back to Esau, the brother of Jacob. And so John confronts the king. See, when you are a follower, disciple, called by the Creator, you have no problem speaking to people, even people who are in authority and power, if the Almighty so instructs. John is speaking. So now the king is bothered. Well, it's not the king so much is bothered. It's the wife of the king who is bothered, because John is telling him that he shouldn't be married to her. And so they're conspiring, the mom and the daughter, on how to take John out. And the king gives the perfect opportunity, because for his birthday, he wants his wife's daughter to dance for him. And the daughter conspires with the mother, and the mother agrees that the daughter can dance, but now there's some things that she wants, and Herod promises up to half of his kingdom. After the situation, because John's in prison, the mother decides she wants the head of the prophet. Because the king has given his word, now he has to take the prophet out. Now, he was afraid of the prophet, but his wife had no fear of the man. Matter of fact, when people speak things that we may not want to hear, there are times we may want them to be gone. And either we get away from them or try to get them away from us. And sometimes we can be so bothered by people we wish evil on them. John has the opportunity to speak to the king. The king's got an issue. The wife and the daughter conspires, and now John in prison is about to be beheaded because he's given himself over to some lustful spirit. Now, this is the king of Israel. And so the Herod sins and have John beheaded in prison, and his head was brought in a charger and given to the damsel, and she brought it to her mother. Verse 12, Matthew 14, and his disciples came and took up the body and buried it. And look at what it says here. And they went and told Yeshua. Now, these were not Yeshua's disciples. These were John's disciples. John's disciples took John, buried his body, came and told Yeshua. And when Yeshua heard of it, he departed thence by ship into a desert place apart. And when the people had heard thereof, they followed him on foot out of the cities. So what we're doing here is we're given a backdrop of what's happening that is about to take place in John chapter 6, here in Matthew chapter 14. Mark tells us the news about the beheading of John coinciding with the return of the 12 who had sent out. Now, in chapter number 12 and 13, where Yeshua actually sends out the disciples. Oh, it's chapter 11. Chapter 11, he sends out the disciples. He sends the 12 out. Now, he sends them out to preach in their cities. And in chapter number 14, they come back. But in Mark's gospel, John's situation coincides with the 12 returning. And this is what Mark writes. And immediately the king sent an executioner and commanded his head to be brought. And he went and beheaded him in the prison and brought his head in a charger and gave it to the damsel. And the damsel gave it to her mother, verbatim to what we found in chapter 14 of Matthew. And when his disciples heard of it, they came and took up his corpse and laid it in the tomb. Now, this next verse, verse 30, Mark chapter 6, and the apostles gathered themselves together unto Yeshua and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. Now, if you didn't know what was going on here, you'll see that in Mark chapter 6, if you could put that back up, verse 29, and when his disciples heard of it, they came and took up his corpse and laid it in the tomb. This is speaking of John. But then there's a transition to the apostles, which is not the disciples of Yeshua, but the disciples of John. They are the disciples of Yeshua. They now gathered themselves together unto Yeshua and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught, in relationship to him sending them out. So they returned. And he said unto them, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while, for there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. And then Luke corroborates Mark and informs us that Herod thought Yeshua was John the Baptist resurrected. So Herod has some issues. After he killed John, had John's head cut off, he hear about Yeshua. And it's like, okay, I thought I killed that dude. I thought I took him out. And so Luke writes, now Herod the Tetrarch heard of all that was done by him, Yeshua, and he was perplexed because that it was said of some that John was risen from the dead. Now, obviously, those who are saying John is risen from the dead were those who believed in a resurrection. So we know these weren't Sadducees because Sadducees didn't believe there was a resurrection. So these were individuals who were actually probably been taught in the synagogue by the Pharisees. In verse 8, and some that Elias. So some said, is John risen from the dead? Remember when we started John, the Pharisees, the priests sent some Pharisees to John and said, hey, are you, John said, I'm not the Messiah, Well, are you that prophet? I'm not that prophet. Are you the Elijah? I'm not that Elijah. Well, who are you? And so John goes off and he tells him, and so he says, and of some, so some are saying that Elias had appeared, speaking of Yeshua, because John had been beheaded, and others that one of the old prophets was risen again. So what I'm laying out for you here is that there was a lot of beliefs among the people during the time of Yeshua. Everybody didn't believe the same thing. All the Jewish people were not on the same page. All the synagogues weren't teaching the same things. Depending on the synagogue leader and the yeshiva they went to and who discipled them determined their doctrine. Just like today, the Baptists, if you were brought up in a Baptist church, you have a view of the Bible that is different from people who were brought up in the Pentecostal church. Even if you were brought up in a fundamental Baptist church, which was different than the American Baptist church, you had a different belief than the Southern Baptist church. So even though you're all Baptists, depending on your leadership and the denomination determines what you believe. And even the Pharisees had various synagogues, various leaders who had teachers who established that synagogue, and individuals were a part of that denomination amongst the Pharisees. So there was a variety of belief systems among the people of the day, just as there's a variety of beliefs among the people in our midst. I am not deceived. I know that everybody who attends House of Israel don't necessarily agree with all the stuff I teach. I know that there are people who don't even believe. We got folks among us who follow our teaching, but they're on a different feast day. They're on a different calendar day. Some say Yahweh, some say Yahuwah, some say Jehovah. And when you listen, it's like, okay, how can you be at House of Israel saying Yahuwah when he teaches Jehovah? But you never hear me tell people not to say Yahuwah. If that's what you believe his name is, by all means, say it. I'm not here to try to control. I'm simply here to teach. And if some off teaching comes in, then I got to correct it and drive it out. Hallelujah. This is why I'm very cautious about who comes here and teach. But I'm not getting hung up, because I know that even though I believe his name is Jehovah, I could be wrong. I used to believe his name was Yahweh. Before that, I believed his name was the Lord. And before that, I called him God. From time to time, I still do, but you understand what I'm saying. As we grow, Father reveals himself more and more to us. And when it comes down to the name, there is not one of us can be 100% certain. So I don't get caught up in that stuff. This is what I believe. This is what I call him. And whatever you believe, some folks among in here still say Jesus. Those of you who've said Jesus, don't raise your hand. I don't want to point you out. But I've never corrected you, have I? Anybody who have used Jesus in here, even at the microphones, you've never heard me correct them. Why? Because I believe just as Father has brought me to the place I'm at, he knows how to get you where he wants you. And part of what I want to share with you today is the only person that hinders Father from getting you where he wants you and that hinder you from doing the miracles he has called you to is you. I realize I am my biggest enemy. Matter of fact, the devil is not a greater enemy to me than my carnal thinking. You'll see what I'm saying here in a moment. And Herod said, John have I beheaded, but who is this of whom I hear such things? And he desired to see him. And the apostles, when they were returned, told him all that they had done. See, the apostles are coming back. So here's the situation. Yeshua just got the news that John had been beheaded. Simultaneously to that, the apostles are returning from being sent out to the cities that Yeshua is going to go to. So in the process of all this going on, Yeshua, I suspect, is desiring a moment to get away from everybody so that he can contemplate, maybe mourn, and just deal with the news he just got about John, that he can fellowship a little bit with his disciples, never losing sight or focus of what his mission was, and that was to bring, to come and present the kingdom of heaven to the people and call them to repentance. In verse 11, and the people, when they knew it, followed him. Now, Yeshua had this issue. The issue he had is because of the work he did, folks followed him. Somebody once told me that you believe you are a leader and you look back and nobody is following you, you're simply taking a walk. And the people, when they knew it, followed him. And he received them and spoke unto them of the kingdom of Elohim and healed them that had need of healing. So back to chapter 6, John, verse 2. And a great multitude followed him because they saw his miracles. Now, if you look at John chapter 5, you see that there was a miracle that was done at the pool. And so John chapter 5 and John chapter 6, there's a lot that transpire in between them, which tells us that they're not chronological. We don't know how much time has transpired between John chapter 5 and John chapter 6. Verse 4, and the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. Now, what's interesting is that this is inserted in John chapter 6, but in John chapter 7, we are in tabernacle. And there's a big jump from Passover, unleavened bread, feast of weeks, trumpets, atonement, to tabernacle, which tells us between John chapter 6 and John chapter 7, there's another gap. If in fact the Jews' Passover or the feast of Passover was nigh. Verse 5, when Yeshua then lifted up his eyes and saw a great company come unto him, he saith unto Philip. Now, here's where I need you to really pay attention and focus. He said unto Philip, whence shall we buy bread that these may eat? Now notice again, verse 5, when Yeshua then lifted up his eyes and saw a great company come unto him, he looks to Philip and says, whence shall we buy bread that these may eat? Yeshua is about to make a point with his disciples. And this he said in chapter 6, verse 6, to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do. So Yeshua asked a question, knowing all the time what he's about to do, and it has nothing necessarily to do with Philip buying bread. Yeshua knew he was about to perform a miracle amongst his disciples and in the presence of the multitude. Philip answered. Notice what he says. He saith unto Philip, Philip answered him, 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient. Because Philip see all these people coming too. He says, it's not sufficient for them that every one of them may take a little. So what is he? He's equating, very similar to what my staff do here. Whenever we have a feast, there's some folks around here who need me to know that we're going to need to buy certain things. And they're calculating what they need to buy based on those who RSVP and tell us they're coming to the feast. And when they make these calculations based on the number of people, they come up with a dollar amount that they think would be sufficient, depending on others, to bring those dishes to pass. But in case they don't, we want to make sure we have enough food for everybody. So there's calculations that are made. So Philip is looking at the group, the multitude, and says, man, it's going to take more than 200 pennyworth. Now, 200 pennyworth is a denarii. In one place, in one of the Gospels, it says, it's going to take more than 8 months of wages to feed all these people. So what we see here is Philip is in the natural. Andrew is in the natural. The disciples are in the natural. Yeshua knows what he's about to do, but he's challenging them. Now, take into consideration, they all just came back from watching the miraculous power of the Almighty manifesting in the midst of them. So I'm going to tell you something. Especially I hear people, they give a testimony, and the last time they experienced the power of the Almighty was 18 years ago. I don't want to rain on their testimony, but they want to tell me a testimony, and the testimony, I'm expecting something fresh, something recent. But the testimony go back a few years. And though I don't say anything in my mind, I'm thinking, is that the most recent time you saw the power of the Almighty manifest in your life? But I have to maintain a composure because I'm excited about the testimony, while at the same time I'm concerned about the lack of power that should manifest and cause testimony. See, let me tell you something, brothers and sisters. If you believe you are a worker of miracles, then guess what? You'll be walking around like you can work miracles. And when you believe you are a worker of miracles and you start walking around like you are a worker of miracles, you're looking for opportunities to manifest the glory of the Almighty. See, here's how the glory of the Almighty is manifest. Remember when Yeshua said to his disciples, let your light so shine that men shall see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. These works that he's talking about is the works that he told them they're going to do. Greater works. He said, listen, the works that I do, you shall do. Did Yeshua run a food pantry? Now, I'm giving you a precursor to where I'm going here in just a moment, but I'm not there yet. So they're looking at this situation, and like any natural-minded person, they're trying to assess what they got to work with. You know how we look at our budget, and our budget can dictate to us what we can and what we cannot do. We look at what we got in our hands, and this is where our sight has a tendency to get in the way of our faith. Our sight can get in the way of our faith, brothers and sisters. We'll look at what we have, and by looking at what we have from a natural mind, we put limitations on the Almighty's ability to manifest supernaturally in our presence. We look at our future and we determine what we can and cannot do based on what we have in our hands. And do you know that when you do that, you have a tendency to discount and to shut down the Almighty's ability to work through you, and even the visions that he has shown you, the things that he has shown you doing. Some of us have had dreams. Some of us have had visions. Some of us have daydreamed. Some of us have seen ourselves doing things that are so incredible, it's hard for us to even believe. And we see it in the dream. And so we move from this place of a dream and supernatural in the realm of thinking to the realm of thinking in the natural. When you are receiving a vision, when you are receiving a prophecy, when you are receiving a word of knowledge, the Almighty is interacting with our mind. Father is not working through us absent of working through us in our mind. When you dream, your mind is at work. When you see a vision, your mind is at work. When you hear a word, your mind is at work. And that's the supernatural aspect of your mind being bombarded by the supernatural one revealing supernatural things to us from a supernatural perspective to our mind. But then we flip over to the natural mind. And the natural mind, even though we've just had a vision or dream that is supernatural, put limitations on the supernatural dream from a natural perspective, because now we take what has happened in the supernatural and try to make it fit in a natural box. It doesn't work that way. Our biggest issue and challenge is not what people do, it's what we think about what they've done, how we reason in our heads what they've done. You see, your biggest issue is not so much what somebody said several years ago. The biggest issue is that you still play it over in your mind. Something somebody said, something somebody did is like a rewind in the mind. And instead of flushing it out, it still have a place in the database, in the memory bank. And from time to time, it rises, it shows itself, and it sets us back. Your biggest problem is not the devil. Your biggest problem is not your wife. Your biggest problem is not your husband. It's not your children, it's not your parents. Your biggest problem is you. And the quicker you get that revelation, the quicker you can get over yourself. Philip says, hey, it's going to take a lot of money to feed these people. But get this next phrase. Check this out. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon's Peter brother, said unto him, there's a lad here which had 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish, but what are they among so many? And I'm thinking, why are you even bringing that up? You see, from one extreme to the next, Philip is saying, we're going to need more than 200 pennyworth. Andrew is looking at a lad with bread and some fish. Now, here's what's going on. Here's what I believe what's going on. Why would Andrew bring up the 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, knowing it was not enough for the multitude? He knew that. He said it. So what's the point? You see, there are times when Father puts a thought in our head. He puts a thought in our head, but we may not necessarily recognize it as of him. When I talk about how to hear God's voice, I deal with the fact that Father deal with us in our own thinking. See, people talk about visualizing. People talk about memorizing. People talk about total recall, praying to remember what they've studied. So when they go to take the test, they have a memory of the things that they have studied, and they can put the right answer in the right place. All this is a happening. It's a working of the mind, brothers and sisters. Much of what Father does in us is going to start up here. And so Philip has made a statement. Andrew makes a statement. Andrew did not know that at that very moment, the thought of identifying the boy with the barley loaves and fish was most likely given to him by Jehovah at that moment, and acting on those thoughts to speak, even though he could not see how so little could do so much. Now, remember, Yeshua had already said he already knew what he was going to do. He said to Philip, and now Andrew chimes in. And it's Philip's statement that gives Yeshua the platform to do what he's about to do next. I've said to you all before how many of you have made mistakes because you went against the very thought you was thinking. I can't tell you how many times I've said I should have listened to my first mind. How I've rejected what I was thinking it was my own thought. And this is where it becomes somewhat a challenge, because Father doesn't ask us to do anything evil or wicked. All that is good and perfect comes from above. Have you ever been angry with someone and a nice thought come to you concerning them and you talk yourself out of it because you're angry? Have you ever had a situation to where you felt you needed to reconcile and apologize, but the more you reasoned about it, the more you thought you talked your way out of it because the other person hasn't apologized or did something or said something. In fact, you were about to, and then they did something dumb and you just decided you would change your mind and not even apologize, even though that is what was in your heart at the moment. Some circumstance talked you out of it. Some situation caused you to refocus. And the question is why are you thinking to do something good concerning somebody in the first place? Is that coming from you? The Bible tells us that we have to take all these thoughts into captivity. In other words, when something comes to my mind, and this is where the knowledge of the word comes in, I can test that thought. I can test the spirit that is speaking to me. If it's the enemy who's shooting fiery darts and causing me to think evil, or is it the Almighty who's planting seeds of faith in the midst of circumstances that is going south? How you may be able to say something at a moment in time because you had that thought, but decided you wouldn't say anything, you wouldn't intervene, and later on kick yourself in the behind because you had the opportunity and you missed it. We must learn, brothers and sisters, how to begin to discern these things that is going on in our heads, because the Almighty worked with us through our own thinking. We have to learn how to separate our thoughts from his thoughts. He knows the plan. And for him to reveal his plan to you, how you think it's going to happen? He going to send you a telegram, a letter in the mail, use somebody to speak to you. Folks, Father desires intimate interaction with each and every one of us where we are. He'll speak to you. He'll speak to your wife. He'll speak to your son. He'll speak to your daughter. He'll speak to the children. He'll speak to the parents. He will speak to the neighbors. He will speak to whomever he need to speak to get us where he wants us. Our role is to try to come in tune, to tune in his voice and to tune out the other voices. My sheep know my voice. But I'll tell you, just like an infant learned the voice of its parents, we as infants in him learn his voice. And we learn how to distinguish his voice from all the other noise. And once you zero in on his voice, it's not so hard for you now to begin to be led by him. Because he'll begin to speak, he'll begin to show you things, and the key is zeroing in. And so Andrew makes a statement. And you know, there are times when Father speaks to us in our thoughts, and we can shrug the thought off or act out on the thought if it is perceived to be something good and honorable in the sight of Jehovah. Now, it's important for you, for me especially, because whenever I'm looking at these moments, I try to find circumstances. There's been so many times when I've taught and people would tell me, man, you were listening into my living room. Man, you were speaking the same thing I was talking about on my way here to service. Man, you was talking about the very thing my wife and I were talking about last night. Man, you must have heard me arguing with such and such. Man, you know, and these things happen in my own life yesterday. See, right now, there's, as I've shared with some of you, there's a tremendous amount of warfare going on. And it's a tremendous amount going on in my life because I've got a lot of responsibilities that I got to manage. And there are people who are depending on me to manage these responsibilities. And I'm trying to follow, you know, I have a wife, I have 8 children, I've got ministry, I've got employees, I've got a call, I have to study, I have to walk out my faith. I got a lot that I'm dealing with, just like many of you got a lot you're dealing with. And in dealing with these things, I can try to do them in my own strength, or I can rely on the one who has given me all these responsibilities. Now, some would say, brother, you're taking this stuff on yourself. Listen, Hebrew Roots University may have come out of my mouth, but I didn't plant the seed in my heart. House of Israel may be the name of this ministry, but I didn't come up with that on my own. If I'd had my way, this would be Abundant Life International Ministries. But Father scratched that, says, no, it's House of Israel. Okay. House of Israel it is. And here's where we are. Yesterday, I was doing my weekly Friday routine. And I was at this place called Earth Fair. Some of you may know of it. And I typically go there for organic produce and other things because of their reputation of not having genetically modified products. And when I go in, I can feel safe about what I'm purchasing, not like some of the other places that may have an organic section. I know that pretty much all of the products in here may be good for me, even though they sell shellfish and pork. And I just avoid those things because even organic pork is still swine. Kosher pork is still swine, right? Kosher crabs, they were humanely harvested, you know? Anyway, so I'm walking in and I'm looking for, you know, my produce, and I'm the kind of person I smell, sniff, and from time to time taste. Because they've given me the right to do that. I'm one of those valued customers. And even if I wasn't, if I'm gonna buy it, I wanna know what it tastes like. If it's sweet or not. And anyway, so I'm in there and I hear, it's like my eyes are directed and I'm looking at this section over there and they've got these beautiful flowers. Now, a woman had all walked by but I'm looking over there and I see these flowers and it's like, okay. And I'm still checking out my fruit and veggies. And it's like somehow my feet are just directed to the flowers, right? And I'm looking at the flowers, it's like, okay. Now, let me let you in on it. These are roses. Now, I'm already having issues with my wife. Her and I aren't in the same page right now. And I can tell you that there has even been some thoughts that I haven't had in years. And so the last thing I want to be looking at is some flowers. But I know this voice. So I go over to the flowers and I'm looking. There's a beautiful set of red roses and pick them up and smell them because I smell flowers too. You know, I don't eat the petals because I don't buy them to eat. But I, you know, smell them, see what kind of fragrance. And I put those, it's like, nah. And then I see these white and pink and they look nice. And I pick them up and I smell them and nah. And then I look at these pink ones and I pick them up and I hear the voice, buy these. Buy these? For who? Buy these for your wife. This is what the voice is telling me, right? Now, I know enough to not be stupid. I may not know what he's doing, but I know what he's saying at the moment, and I've got to deal with the issue that is in me, the issue that tries to resist the instruction of doing something. I ain't feeling this right now. So I get the flowers, put them in the basket, And I'm looking at them and I'm careful. And when I get in my truck, I set them nice and, you know, I don't want them to drop and stuff start falling off. And then, you know, after I'm done and I get home and I'm sitting there and I'm going through in the truck before I go in the house as to how am I going to present these things. And the Spirit says, say, you was at the store. I spoke to you to buy these for your wife and hand them to her. So I get out, take the, now, you know, all of this over some flowers and stuff. So I go out, I go in the house and I go up to her and I says, Father told me to buy these and to give them to you here. Now, I wasn't ready for what came next. My wife said, I was at the supermarket and I saw some roses and I was going to buy them for myself. And I decided not to. Now, it was at that moment. I mean, I knew I heard from him when he was talking to me, but the confirmation was at that moment. And you may think that's a little thing, but the little things Father do are huge. See, Father know how to fix stuff that seems to you irreparable. He know how to work things out where you can't even see a way. And all we have to do is not get in the way. When he's dealing with us and breaking the hardness of our hearts and the shells and the calluses that we've built around for our own protection, becoming vulnerable in a circumstance or a situation, knowing that you just may be taken advantage of and not received right, but you just might be received right and not taken advantage of. What he wants us to do is listen. And so when I presented these, I knew based on her response that it was a confirmation of what he was doing while I'm out shopping. And so now, this morning, fast forward, I'm on my face. I'm meditating on what Father is giving me. I just had a moment with him. And this morning, I did something that is kind of out of character. I'd already fell on my face and worshiped and talked to him. And while I'm meditating and preparing, and he begins to speak to me, and I find myself back on my face, worshiping and thanking him. And what I was reminded of was, even though he says that a man's enemies can be those of his own house, the thing that Father said to me, and he took me back, that our enemies, even though they may be in our house, our greatest enemy is not the devil. Our greatest enemy is not the person in our house, is not who you married to, is not who you divorced from, is not who you've left, who's left you. The greatest enemy you and I will ever face is our own carnal thinking. Your biggest problem is the way you think. That's what gets in our way. Father, in order to get us to do what he wants us to do, he has to wrestle with our own self-image, our own conclusions, our own bad and negative experiences. He's got a lot of stuff he got to work through to get us where he wants us, because even though we may go, sometimes we go dragging our feet, kicking and screaming, and sometimes flat out resisting him, flat out rejecting him, grieving him by not doing what he's speaking in our hearts to do. Paul says, don't grieve the Spirit. Don't quench the Spirit. We have a moment of being in the Spirit and he's dealing with us, and then something go down, snatches us out of the spirit of our thinking and move us into the carnality of our thinking, and now we're talking ourselves out of what he just tried to talk us into. I'm standing there looking at them roses, thinking, why would I be buying these? Now, if I was in the doghouse, which I haven't been in a long time, in my mind, just in my mind, because let some folks think, I've been in the doghouse for a long time. But I have to deal with these things in my head. And part of the main thing I have to deal with is my thinking. You see, Paul said these words, to be carnally minded is death. We don't even realize just our natural way of thinking brings death. For us to do what Father has called or is instructing or is trying to lead us to, we got to now overcome our own carnal way of thinking. We've got to transition into a spirit mind and leaving out of our carnal mind, which we spend the majority of our time in. To be carnally minded is death. But to be spiritually minded is life and peace, because the carnal mind is enmity against Elohim, for it is not subject to the law of Elohim. As a Christian, I spent a lot of time in the Bible, but my learning was from a carnal perspective. In other words, in my natural mind, I'm trying to understand and rationalize spiritual things. My study is carnal. My schooling is carnal. My instructions is carnal. I'm listening to carnal individuals preach from their own interpretations and doctrinal positions. And from time to time, you hear and sense somebody speaking by the Spirit, and the Spirit that is coming out of them begins to deal and trouble the Spirit within you, and you become convicted at that moment. That's a spiritual interaction. It's not a carnal interaction. Whenever you are convicted about the way you think, your behavior, your attitudes, your actions, that's not a natural conviction. That's a supernatural conviction that is happening in the same life of the person who just came out of a carnal state of mind. That's an interaction that is constantly going on. And Father is constantly trying to get you to think his thoughts while you're being bombarded with your thoughts and the fiery darts of the enemy. We are constantly in a battle for our mind and our thinking, and the enemy is trying to take your mind, trying to take your thoughts captive when you're supposed to take your thoughts captive. The things that you meditate on are strongholds, because you've meditated on that hurt so long, it's developed a fortress in your head. Now you got a stronghold in your head. That's what caused you to say, I'll never love again. I'll never allow another person that close to me. I'll never get involved in another. I will turn to a woman because I've been so hurt by men. I will turn to men because I've been so hurt by a woman. It'll cause you to move in a place, and it's all carnal thinking because of what has happened in the natural. And everything that is happening in the natural is supernaturally motivated. It's either motivated by the Almighty or it's motivated by the devil, because you ain't that smart. Let me say it this way. I ain't that smart. When I look around and I see what the Almighty has done in my life, and somebody may ask, how do you do it? I don't know. I can take notes and chronicle things that have happened. This menorah. See this menorah? We were over there on Hill Road, and I got a phone call. And God said, hey. Now, I didn't know, you know, he even knew who I was, but he saw me on a program, looked me up and found me, and he said, hey, I made this replica of the temple furniture for an organization that paid me thousands of dollars, and then they didn't finish. And now the thing is, this menorah, this altar of incense, this table of showbread, It's just sitting in my garage. Do you want it? Really? I'll even deliver it. I need the space in my garage. Oh, yeah? Sure, I want it. Send me. You hear what I'm saying? Now, this was the farthest thing from my mind. I've seen pictures of the temple furniture. I've seen pictures of, you know, the priests and all of that. But that phone call was the last thing I was thinking of. And since 2011, this has been a permanent fixture in our backdrop. Probably a little before then. Same guy. I said, you know what? Are you familiar with the tablets? Moses tablets. Some of you all have seen the Ten Commandments and Moses come down with the tablets. These tablets are in Paleo Hebrew. The guy says he developed, what do you call those molds? He developed a mold. And they're exclusive to House of Israel. These are the kinds of things that have happened, whereas people say, you know, how did you do that? It wasn't me doing it. It's Father doing things in the midst of us, and for the most part, I'm going alone for the ride, trying not to get in the way. What I've learned is that if I could just simply stay out the way, I'll say it again, if I could just simply stay out the way, he doesn't need my backseat driving. He don't need me giving direction. He don't need to follow my Google map or my ways or whatever. He knows where he's trying to get us. And in order for him to get us there, the biggest job you and I will have is simply staying out of the way. Let me finish this. He says, because the carnal mind is enmity against Elohim, for it is not subject to the law of Elohim, neither indeed can be. So then they that are in the flesh cannot please Elohim. John 16. And Yeshua said, make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. Matthew says, about 5,000 beside women and children. So that could add, I don't know how many, we don't know, but we know that there were women and children in the mix on top of these 5,000 men. Mark says, and he commanded them to sit down by companies upon the green grass, and they sat down in ranks by hundreds and by fifties. In other words, he set them out in groups. That's what Mark shows us. And then Mark says, and they that did eat of the loaves were about 5,000. Luke comes along and says, for they were about 5,000 men. And he said to his disciples, make them sit down by 50s in a company. So Luke gets 50. Matthew don't get any. Mark gets 100 or 50. And John doesn't get the number, or he doesn't record it. And so in order to get a full picture of what's going on here, it's looking at all of these passages. Verse 11. And Yeshua took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were set down, and likewise of the fish, as much as they would. And so the question is, who did Yeshua give thanks to? Now, Matthew, Mark, and Luke records Yeshua looking to heaven. Yeshua looked to heaven, and he gave thanks. That's what he did. The miracle of the multiplication came from above. Now, it's important for you to know this because the miracles that manifest in our lives is simply by us purposing in our heart like Yeshua. Yeshua purposed in his heart. He knew what he was going to do before he asked Philip where he could buy bread. And the thing that we have to do is purpose in our heart that we can do the works that Yeshua said we can do. Purpose in our hearts that we can do miracles. Purpose in our hearts. When I go for an interview, I'm going to master it. Purpose in my heart that when I put my hands to work on a certain area, I'm going to master it. Purpose in my heart that when I make the effort to stay out of the Almighty's way and to yield to whatever he wants me to do and to allow him to override my own way of thinking, I just want to purpose it in my heart. I want to purpose in my heart that I'm the righteous. Over the course of this week, over the course of this month, over the course of my years, I continue to remind myself, I'm not a sinner saved by grace. I'm the righteousness of Elohim in Yeshua. I'm a righteous man. I'm a holy man. It doesn't matter what you say. You can say what you want because people say things that aren't true. And nobody can tell me about me. Nobody can tell me who I am. You can tell me what you knew from how I used to be. And oftentimes, brothers and sisters, how we used to be is what plays over in the minds of people who are close to you, even when you have changed. And sometimes we make changes and people don't see the changes. And so we just revert back to the person they are familiar with, which says that the change you were trying to make was not a genuine change you felt you should have been making. You were simply trying to change to please somebody. So what have you purposed in your heart that you're going to do? I know for me, I purposed in my heart that I'm going to walk out this walk in my faith, regardless to who walk with me or don't. I've purposed that in my heart. I've purposed in my heart, if this walk costs me everything, my wife, my children, I've purposed in my heart that I'm walking out my faith. I've made that decision. As Job, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. I've just purposed that in my heart. What have you purposed in your heart? But I'll tell you something. When you purpose in your heart that you're going to walk with him, when you are unreasonable in your thinking, he will deal with you. When you aren't thinking straight, when you're thinking out of anger, when you're responding, when you're dealing with individuals based on how they deal with you, when you're treating people the way they have behaved, when you carry a grudge, when you hold on to bitterness, when you hold on to unforgiveness, when you have issue with people because they got an issue with you. But I know they got an issue with me. I don't care about what they think. Like, really? So your response and behavior is based on what? Because if I do have an enemy and they're hungry, what is my instruction? Those who despitefully use or misuse me, what should I do for them? I cannot do people the way they do me. Let me tell you something. It's easy to do that. It's easy to have issue with people who have issue with you. That just keeps the issue fresh. But when you love people, even though they're not loving on you, when you treat people the way you want to be treated, even though they're not treating you the way you believe you should be treated, when you're carrying yourself in a way that is beholden of a son or daughter of the Most High, guess who got your back? You know what he'll do? He will set you up in the presence of your enemy, give you some peace, lay out a banquet in their presence, set you down and say, just eat and stand guard over you while you're doing it. I dare you. Got angels on both sides, in the front and the back. You may not see them because it ain't for you to see. It's your job to just enjoy the meal. And you shouldn't be eating like this. Hallelujah, somebody. I'm almost done. Y'all stop messing with me. Matthew 4, and he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass and took 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and broke and gave the loaves to his disciples and the multitudes and the disciples to the multitude. Yeshua said, when we pray, we are to pray to our Father who is in heaven. I was watching another preacher and he was saying, Lord Jesus, we thank you, Lord Jesus, for all. And it's like, okay, so what is the people who are being in the presence learning here? Pray to Jesus. Yeshua says, when we pray, pray our Father, which are in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. And what are we trying to do as his people in the earth? Our role, brothers and sisters, is to get heaven to manifest here on earth. When I see somebody sick, see, they're not sick in heaven. They're sick here on earth. When I see issues going on in earth, those issues are not happening in heaven. Father know our end from the beginning. He already see you healed. He already see you delivered. He already see you walking in the purpose. And he's dealing with you like that, but you're dealing with yourself in a different manner. Are you dealing with yourself as a failure? Are you dealing with yourself as somebody who has failed? Are you dealing with yourself as somebody who is worthless? Have you allowed what people have spoken into your spirit to affect the way you see yourself, and now you're conducting yourself accordingly? Or are we conducting ourselves in the image and likeness of him who have called us to conduct ourselves as his son or daughter? This is a constant battle, struggle that we have to deal with. What we as disciples are to do is call what is done in heaven to manifest in the earth. Yeshua taught elsewhere, and I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on heaven on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. The miraculous thing about miracles are they are unexplainable. Of all the miracle signs and wonders that occurred in the Bible, in the Old and the New Testament, not one is explained how it happened. You can't explain a miracle. Try to explain how a blind person now can see, how a lame person who couldn't walk. Try to explain what Moses did in the presence of Pharaoh, or Aaron did, or any of the prophets did. There is not one explanation of how any miracle in the Bible happened, and yet people are trying to explain it today, or explain it away. People today try to either explain away miracles as hoaxes, or try to put miracles in the context of human efforts, contributions to humanity through nonprofit corporations. And as a former nonprofit executive director, I explain the work we did as fulfilling scriptural mandates given to us by Yeshua. My go-to passage for our food ministry, when I was writing out those letters and asking people to contribute, for the clothing ministry, when I was asking people to make donation to our clothing pantry, for the prison ministry, when we were going into prisons and sending material, for our transitional housing ministry, which we operated, the go-to passage was Matthew chapter 25. Many of you know it. Then shall the king come, say unto them, on my right hand, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was a hungered, and you gave me meat, I was thirsty, and you gave me drink, I was a stranger, and you took me in naked, and you clothed me, I was sick, and you visited me, I was in prison, you came unto me. And what we see, the lesson Yeshua is teaching his disciples and us, is to look to Father for our provisions, not our resources. But here, in John chapter 6, when they were filled, he said unto his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Not only did the loaves and fish was not sufficient, but the fragments that were left over. And I'm sitting here thinking as I'm reading this, and every time I've looked at this, the disciples received something from Yeshua. And then the disciples went and handed it. He handed it to the person. Now, I want you to see this for a moment. He's taking something, a piece of bread, a piece of fish, and he's handing this fish and this bread to the person. Now, the person receives the fish, and the person receives the bread. Now, obviously, they're eating the bread and eating the fish. But they keep eating the bread and eating the fish. So imagine this one person sitting there, eating the bread, eating the fish, eating more bread, eating more fish. Eating more bread, eating more fish. Eating bread and fish, and now they're full. And they still got bread and fish. Now imagine you sitting there doing that. You see this? It's like you keep eating, but you still got more to eat. How is this happening? How is this happening? And then you get to the point to where I'm full, but I still got bread. Man, I can't eat no more. I remember a song back in the Baptist church, feed me, Lord, feed me till I want no more. And here it is where they're eating and eating and eating, and they still have. See, this is the supernatural provisions Father desires for us. But in order for us to experience the supernatural provisions he has for us, we got to move out of the carnal into the supernatural. We got to walk in the Spirit. We got to be led by the Spirit. We got to live in the Spirit. We have to take every opportunity presented to us to be in the Spirit, which means that we have to reject all the opportunities we have to be in the carnal. And until you start rejecting and accepting, see, some of us don't even know that this is something we have to do. You got to reject your carnal self. You got to reject your carnal way of thinking. You got to reject your natural way of doing things. You start acknowledging him in all your ways. In all your ways. You start involving him in your thinking, involving him in your conversation, involving him in your actions, involving him in your behavior, involving him in your interactions with other people. And this takes a concerted and focused effort all day, every day, and watch how you go in and out, how you go in and out. Even if you are aware, if you're not aware, you're out. You're not even trying. I'm almost done. We've gone over our time, but I can't do a part two on this. Then those men, verse 14, when they had seen the miracle that Yeshua did, said, "This is of a truth, that prophet that should come into the world." Churches and nonprofit groups have reduced miracles to works, and this is where our issue comes in. Churches and nonprofit groups see food pantries as the miracle of provision for the hungry and poor. So we direct people to food. Food pantries are doing the miracles now. Food pantries are feeding the hungry. Why? Because we've allowed institutions to reduce our way of thinking out of a supernatural thinking to a natural way of thinking. Loaves and Fish is now the name of a nonprofit group right here in Charlotte, one of the largest nonprofit groups in America. People look to doctors, nurses, clinics, hospitals, medicine, and homeopaths as the healers today. These modern day practices have reduced the level of faith for miracle signs and wonders to people of faith, putting their faith in medicine and doctors and various practices. It's easier for us to call the doctor than to call the elder. But we don't want to bother nobody. Plus, we got insurance. But see, this is what the natural has done to us. It has taken us out of even thinking supernatural to walking in the natural in every aspect of life. Although some good has come out of some of these practices, Father is still the healer who uses his people and has given us his gifts to exercise our faith in him to do miracles, signs, and wonders amongst us today as he did amongst his people in the first century. Thing is that can you come to the grips that this can be done in you? That's the real challenge. That's the real challenge. Final verse. When Yeshua therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. When the people saw the miracles that Yeshua did, think about this. They were so desperate for the king, for the leader, for the Messiah, that they were ready to make it happen by force. By force. Here's the thing. Sometimes the people around you are influenced by the people around them. See, Judas had a lapse in judgment when he betrayed the Almighty. But Judas didn't betray the Almighty on his own. He was influenced. What was he influenced by? Somebody who wanted the Almighty to be taken care of, and they used resources. What am I saying? What I'm saying here, brothers and sisters, is that there are people who want things out of you, people who want to get things done by you, that will use you to get their agenda accomplished. There are people who will use your gift. There are people who will use your talents. There are people who will use your body. There are people who will use your looks. There are people who will use your intellect. There are people who will use your influence. There are people who will use your connections. They see you got something they want, and they start trying to figure out how to get it. And see, once they get what they want, they out of here. And you left holding the bag. You left feeling betrayed. You left feeling used. You left feeling taken advantage of. And it creates hurt, and it creates pain. And that pain and that hurt that it creates affects your whole worldview. Now the sweet little you has become somebody you don't even know. And you ask yourself, how in the world did I get here? I'll tell you how you got here. You got here because you was uncovered, unprotected. And maybe mom and dad didn't cover you like they should have. But that doesn't excuse you from covering yourself. You should have a responsibility to you. You should look out for your best interests. And that requires you putting your faith in him. So Yeshua saw, these people here are going to try to manipulate me. Now, the devil couldn't get me to bow down and worship him, even though he showed me all this stuff. And now here it is, people that I'm ministering to, people that I've just healed, people that I've fed, see the miracles. They see the supernatural work going on in my life. And now they're trying to figure out how to come and take me by force and make me do something I didn't come to do. And they will use nice words, cunning, manipulative words. They will speak to your ego. They will speak to your flesh. They will say sweet nothings that end up sweet nothings. And once they get you where they want you, they take credit for you. Yeah, I caused that to happen. Yeah, I helped him get there. Yeah, I did that. Surely she wouldn't be there if it hadn't have been for me. And Yeshua, what did he do? When he perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he separated himself from them and went alone. Final, like Yeshua, we must resist the will of the people even as we resist our own will and conclude like Yeshua, not my will, but thine will be done. That's it. I pray that this teaching has spoke to you in some way, has maybe hopefully adjusted your thinking, inspired you to be better, to be or to thrive to be what he wants you to be, to desire to know what it is that he wants you to be, to desire to know what he wants to do through you. I need you to say this. It just came to me. People are not my problem. I'm my problem, and I give me to him. I will no longer be a problem. Amen.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. You can find more inspirational teachings and download our free ebooks on our ministry website at arthurbaileyministries.com. Please follow us on Facebook at House of Israel-Arthur Bailey Ministries, on Instagram at Apostle Arthur Bailey, on Twitter at Apostle Bailey, and you can subscribe to our YouTube page at Apostle Arthur Bailey 1. If you're in the Charlotte area, please come and fellowship with us. We'll do our best to make you feel right at home. Our address is on our website at the About link under Contact Us. Again, thank you for joining us, and until next time, Shalom, Saints.